This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Well, thank you so much, Parker, and welcome to Time Signatures. I'm your host, Jim Irvin. And today's guest is a Manx blues guitarist currently touring as a solo artist. But he got his start as a lead guitarist with the blues rock band Backdoor Slam. Born in Port St. Mary, Isle of Man, our guest drew his inspiration from the likes of Rory Gallagher, Eric Clapton, and Robert Johnson. After taking a few traditional guitar lessons, he stopped taking them and decided to teach himself. The band, named after a Robert Cray song of the same name, formed up and seemed to be on their way, but tragedy struck soon after they formed and caused the band to fall apart. Now, there's a lot more to learn about, so let's step back and welcome Davey Knowles to Time Signatures, and we'll get it right from him. So, how are you, Davey? Welcome to Time Signatures.
I'm doing all right. Thanks very much for having me on.
It is a pleasure. Now, normally, I would ask a general icebreaker question related to your earliest memories of music, but I read that at the age of 11, your ear caught the sounds of an iconic song that day, and it put you on a path to becoming a musician, didn't it?
It did, yeah. I was in the car with my dad, and he put a cassette tape of Dire Straits on. It was Sultans of Swing, and hearing that, you know, just blew the door wide open for me, but made me otherwise unemployable from there on. That was where I got the bug for sure.
Now, that song left such an indelible impression on you that you learned how to play it by ear. Is that correct?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, I bought a VHS video of Mark Knopfler live in London. It was like a 1990s concert.
Yeah.
And a great concert. And I kind of used to mirror where his hands were on the neck, kind of looking at the dots, and see if I could pick out the same notes. So I kind of pieced bits of it together that way. And then my dad played a bit and he showed me some chords. And so kind of a fragmented version of it came about. Yeah.
Very cool. Now, from that innocent moment in your youth, you found the aforementioned influence from the likes of Rory, Eric, and the legendary Robert Johnson, bluesmen all. Talk about that journey, if you would, please.
Oh, well, I mean, I think especially where I didn't see the first kind of the blues boom of the 60s, I wasn't around for, and that happens, you need a host to show you, you know, you need someone there to guide you through that. And that was my dad. And as soon as he figured out that, hey, I think I have music in common with my son, we both latched onto that, and that became our thing together. And really that, then, you know, his record collection opened up. And so shortly after finding the Dire Straits thing and kind of absorbing as much of and still do as much of the Mark Knopfler thing as possible, he showed me the Beano album with John Mayall and Eric Clapton.
Sure.
And that was such a great introductory record because, you know, the first song was an Otis Rush tune, and then there was a Robert Johnson tune on there, there's a Freddie King tune on there, there's a Ray Charles tune on there. It just seemed like there was, reading the liner notes of that stuff, there was an enormous amount to learn from it, and it was a great first introduction. So then you go through all of that, and so really it was from working backwards from the Beano album, and then also, you know, well, if you like the Beano album, here's A Hard Road, this is with Peter Green, you know, and then Peter Green's feat with Matt come. And so it was really through that. And then when I found Rory, you know, found Rory Gallagher's music, that was a whole another step of revelation for me.
Now, was this, because I have a similar relationship with my son. I taught him about Peter Frampton and, you know, a little bit of the blues and of course, you know, Ted Nugent and all of those. But what about the added influence of the music growing up just off the coast of Ireland?
Yeah, I mean, the Isle of Man, I could see the mountains of Northern Ireland from the top window of the house I grew up in. I mean, really, really close. And culturally, the Isle of Man has so much more in common with Ireland than it does with England. So the local traditional music sounds really Irish, and you grow up with that just by default. It's everywhere. It's in the pub. It's everywhere. And I dismissed it, as kind of, as you do, the things that you're exposed to on a day-to-day basis, don't you take them for granted? But when I heard Rory, I heard in his playing all of these Celtic inflections that I'd heard in fiddle tunes my whole life, and it was amazing to me that you could take this really exciting and exotic sounding American style music and combine it with something that was right on your own doorstep. And that, I think, was what I related to most with him. And I think also John Mayall did that. When you look at his songwriting, it might have the American framework to it, but the things he's singing about were really quite relatable for us on our side of the pond as well.
Now, talk about those early guitar lessons, Davey. What caused you to decide to drop them and take it on yourself?
Oh, well, there's a lovely, lovely chap who was brave enough to try and teach anyone guitar at school. His name is Peter Lum, and Mr. Lum is a lovely, lovely man. We're still really good friends. He was very much more like the traditional classical, you're not allowed to touch the guitar kind of a way of playing. And I wanted to put a headband on and be Mark Knopfler. He was trying his very hardest to teach me really good fundamental kind of the rudiments of the thing, and I just wanted to put a foot on the monitor and play loud, and we abandoned the kind of traditional way of teaching, and I used to just go down and skip lessons and go down there and just jam with him. But I do find that the kind of the self-taught thing, I don't really believe in that. I was really lucky in the community that I grew up in, that there were so many musicians and there were so many people who were willing to teach me and show me things and, hey, come and sit in, come and play. So I feel like I might not have had formal lessons for very long or really much at all, but I had so many teachers within the community that were willing to pass on a lot of knowledge.
Now, do you feel like those informal lessons had a lot more weight than the formal did because you had such a variety coming at you from different angles?
That's a really good question. Yeah. And I think also when it's taught to you like that, rather than kind of like this, you feel like you're the one discovering it. And there's something that makes that stick. Yeah.
Kind of like a buffet, if you will. A little bit over here, a little bit over there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it just makes you feel like, oh, I'm collecting all of this stuff. And you kind of mix it up your own way then. Yeah, it definitely that approach I think helped me.
Now, let's talk about Backdoor Slam just a bit. You guys kicked off in 2003, correct?
Yeah, roundabout, yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Okay. Talk a little bit about that, the formation of the band.
Oh, well, I've been playing in bands that were my dad's age, around the Isle of Man in the pubs. There was no real drinking age. It was kind of, as long as you behave yourself, you're all right. So we were playing in the pubs from, 13 onwards, which was great training ground. But I was desperate to do my own thing. All my favorite guitar players all sang and wrote songs, and that's what I wanted to do that too. So I wanted to form a band. We formed a band out of high school, and it was with Jamie Armstrong, Ross Doyle, and Brian Garvey, was the first incarnation of the whole thing. And we played, the regular stuff, right? The Battle of the Bands and all of that. And then, because I'd been playing the pubs with the older folks, I'd call up the landlords and see if they'd give us a chance too. And we were lucky enough that they would do that. So we were gigging, straight out the gate, really. It was fabulous.
Now,
Yeah, lucky.
and just as things were taking off for you guys, tragedy struck, didn't it?
Well, yeah, we were very young on the island, and we lost Brian And another friend in a car accident, Brian Garvey and Richard Brooks, died in a car accident. And they were, 17, just turned 17, and it was just, it's strange now. I'm 37, nearly 38, and I think of them as my age. And now I'm just thinking, God, they were just kids, and what would they be doing now? And it's still right
Yeah.
there. It's not a unique situation. Sadly, so many people go through this. And it really blew the whole thing wide open. And we became a trio. And then Jamie, quite understandably, wanted to do university. And then Adam Jones came in. And so me, Adam, and Ross went off. And that's the lineup that first got to the States. Was the
Okay.
three of us there.
And so upon reforming the band to carry on Brian's memory, Backdoor Slam released its first debut album, Roll Away, in June of 2007. Talk about that debut project, Davey, from concept to delivery. What went into that?
Well, I think it's the same as most first records of band. It's what we'd been playing for forever in the pubs. It had been kind of well rehearsed over the years of just playing, and a lot of those songs I'd written as a teenager, 14, 15 years old,
Wow.
it was just what we were playing in the pubs, I guess. And then I got a really lucky break through a friend on the island again, opening up for Chris Difford from Squeeze. He came to the Isle of Man, and I opened up a solo acoustic set, and he was ever so lovely. And it was just a really good thing. It kind of kicked off everything, and that's where we met who had become our manager. And then we met through him a couple on the Isle of Man that had a small recording studio, and that's when we started kind of, all right, the next step is recording, and the next step is trying to shop an album. And it was really recorded in this basement studio on the Isle of Man. Really well recorded,
Wow.
great engineer, but yeah, all quite homegrown.
Very cool. Now, the band split up in 09, and you decide to go out on a solo career, releasing your first album of June of 2009. How did that feel, and how was the album received, Davey?
Oh gosh, it was terrifying, because it fizzled out. It didn't really translate or last on a bigger stage. Kind of, we went from doing pubs one year to the next year we were opening up for Kid Rock and Lynyrd Skynyrd doing arenas, and it was,
Yeah.
how do we do this? It was a huge learning curve, and I think it fractured the whole thing, really. A bit too much too soon. And then I shuffled off and did my own thing. And it was quite validating, because I was really low and feeling, God, have I done this stuff? Have I done the right thing here? Have we done the right thing here? Am I going to, all I ever wanted to do was keep doing this. So I was worried that that was in jeopardy, right? And
Sure.
that first solo record, the first call I got was to see if I would go out on the road opening up for Jeff Beck. And that was just like oh my gosh, this couldn't have come at a better time. I feel like I'm still allowed to do this,
Yeah.
and that was a wonderful thing. And then the next thing that happened was a songwriting friend of mine who's sadly no longer around, Jamie Rounds. He lived in Nashville, and he said Peter Frampton's lives in town now, and he's out and about doing co-writes. I've put your name in the hat. And I said, why'd you do that? I'm terrified. And I got a phone call from Peter, and he just said, let's do something. And it took a few months, but we got in the same room, hit it off, and wrote some songs together. And then it was, would you produce my album? He's like, let's do it. And so
Wow.
it kind of went, well, up another little notch. And as far as how it was received, I'm not sure. I think some people were very, upset that the Backdoor Slam thing didn't have as much legs as we'd hoped.
Sure.
But on the other hand, I think it was not really about how it was received, and more about this felt like I had room, and I had space to go and do something. That sometimes Backdoor Slam felt a bit constricting, and this was a lot more liberating, maybe.
Sure. Now, fast forward, you've released several great albums. But I think your 2024 release, The Invisible Man, might be some of your best work yet. What say you?
Well, thank you. I'm very glad it's going in that direction. That's really lovely. And thank you. I feel really proud of it. I feel really, really proud of it. And to get to play with a great group of musicians, you know, and I think it's a solid piece of work. I'm quite pleased.
I would have to agree with you. As a matter of fact, when I first put the album on, one of the things that I do when I'm preparing for an interview is I try to immerse myself in the music of the artist that I'm going to be talking to. And I was really caught off guard because I wasn't expecting it to grab me right out of the gate like it did. Usually takes a song or two or three before I, you know, really start feeling it. But I have to tell you, I really have enjoyed your music, and specifically The Invisible Man. I mean, that to me, I truly feel like that's some of your best work.
Thank you, Jim. That's really, really kind of you. I'm glad you like it so much. It's
yes, sir.
Yeah, one of the big things going in for us was we'd been playing together as a band for a little while, and we wanted to make sure that came across, and we wanted to have that kind of 70s vibe. You know, we're all, that's where the majority of the music that we love comes from.
And I think that was it right there, man. The Peter Green era and Rory and, oh man, it drew me in.
Try to avoid doing a lot of fluff, you know, because you can get carried away and go, ooh, what if we do this? What if we add this part? What if we do that? And what I did like about Rory's records, it was just like, all right, lads, bam, 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 bam.
Yep.
Jobs again, yep. You know, and I like that approach. That's what we like to do live. That's what felt right on record.
And by the way, if you look over my shoulder here, you see that 45 hanging on the wall?
That is
one of my prized pieces signed by Jeff Beck that I picked up.
Oh, fabulous.
So I knew you were going to be here, and I thought, man, I gotta put that out because I have a Peter Green also, but knowing your history with Jeff, which I want to talk a little bit about that, Davey. Over the course of the last several years, you've built a solid reputation for delivering some delicious blues rock to the world of music. You've opened for the likes of Jeff Beck and Buddy Guy. You've toured with Joe Satriani. Definitely some impressive credentials there, my friend. Not bad for a guy that's only 37. What's next for you, man?
I don't know. I have been disproportionately lucky. It feels sometimes like those things feel really like they've happened to someone else, if that makes sense.
Yes.
My whole thing has always been, I really love this. I really love this. Right before this phone call, I'm sat in front of my little home studio computer thing, and I'm writing and I'm recording all the time, and that's what I love to do. So my whole thing throughout any and all of this is I just want to keep doing it. And I don't have any dreams of grandeur. I don't have any aspirations of greatness. I would just like to do good work and have the opportunity to do it. That's all. So I'm very lucky to have had and continue to have a massive education with people like that. I've been so lucky in that regard. But as far as kind of reaching for things that I'm not that ambitious. I feel like I'm quite happy just to play.
I have to ask you, given the company that you've kept throughout the years, have you ever caught yourself just standing off stage watching Jeff Beck tend to business or watching Buddy Guy or?
Yeah. And just baffled. I have a really good story, slightly name droppy story.
Sure, go ahead. I love name drops.
If I'm allowed to use colorful language on the show briefly. I was in Amsterdam playing a show with Joe Satriani and Sonny Landreth. And Joe had called Sonny and I up for the encore which was Going Down by Freddie King. Good encore tune, right? And halfway through the song, you know, it's solo time, and Joe and I step back and we're playing rhythm guitar together, and Sonny is off doing his thing. And Joe kind of leans over to me and he says in my ear, he says, "Man, I don't know what I'm going to play after that." And all I could think of to say was, "Joe, I don't know what the f*** I'm doing here." And it was just this, how did this happen? You're worried about what you're going to play, and I can't believe that I'm standing here. You know, it was just this mad, mad feeling. So yeah, every time get to sit and watch people like that, you take as many notes as you can and absorb like a sponge and enjoy the snot out of it.
Yeah, definitely. One of my favorite interviews that I caught was actually when I talked to Joe Bonamassa, and I asked him what it was like, because the Rolling Stones had called him to come and play. And he said, "We got up there and we just killed it. We just absolutely killed it." And then Keith Richards got up there and did the first couple of strains, I think it was of Start Me Up, and blew us right off the stage. He said, "That's a very humbling experience." And I mean, for a guy of his experience, I mean, come on, you know, that's something else.
But how lovely that he recognizes that, and the humility of that is so beautiful.
Oh,
we,
yes.
We had a much smaller, well, we got called up, Backdoor Slam played with Government Mule. And I remember the first night of the tour was Halloween night at the Orpheum in Boston.
Oh, wow.
And we weren't super hip to Government Mule. We knew Warren through the Allman Brothers and stuff, but we weren't really as well educated as we ought to have been for this. And we got up and we felt the same way. Like, we went and we played and we thought, yeah, you know, we beat that. We did a good set, that brilliant, you know. And then they got up and they did an hour and a half of their own stuff, and we're going, oh, man, this is going to be a really long tour. You know, this is going to be incredible. This is, we just got our asses handed to us, you know. And then he said, "We'll be back." And we're looking at each other going, "They're coming back?" And they get back on and they do the whole of Dark Side of the Moon, and then stuff from Animals and stuff from The Wall. And
wow.
And we're going, oh, man. And just the bam, right back down to earth, you know. They're just fabulous. Those moments are everything, though. That's how you learn.
Indeed, indeed. Well, Davey, where can folks go to find out more about you, maybe buy some albums, some merch, and maybe book you for a gig?
Yeah, all of this stuff. The regular website is daveyknowles.com. I'm doing the Facebook, the Instagram. I try and avoid TikTok, but I'm on there as well. I'm just not very good at that. I feel like I'm the wrong age bracket. But yeah, all of those good things. Yeah, website, Facebook, Instagram mainly.
Absolutely. And Davey Knowles, it has been a pleasure, sir. I want to thank you so much for your time, and thank you for joining me today on Time Signatures.
Oh, Jim, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, as this episode comes to a close, I want to tell you about the VFW National Home, located just about 30 miles southwest of my current location in Eaton Rapids, Michigan. The VFW National Home assists military, veterans, then their families with children, by creating a foundation of services and resources to achieve their personal and family goals in order to move forward in a positive, safe, and healthy environment. Among the many things offered through the VFW National Home are single-family homes within the community at no cost, tutoring, classes, secondary financial assistance, and educational resources to empower and grow. They also offer licensed daycare for their residents at no charge. Visit vfwnationalhome.org today and learn more, and also make a tax-deductible donation, would you please? And thank you so much for your consideration. And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to our guest, Davey Knowles, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you that keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Ervin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.
Baby, I'm